Huh.
This is very odd. January 25th, 2010, Isha Upanishad Bhakti Shastri Maipur.
This is for some reason. I'm not getting...
Oh, that's why. Because it only lasts for 2 seconds. And it doesn't come on again.
All right. It also helps us define good and evil. Is that a good thing to know? What's good and what's evil? What we can do. What we can do and what we can't do. And also Isha Upanishad tells us how to achieve real satisfaction and fulfillment in life, how to become complete, how to feel completely satisfied. So first of all, the introduction, which we'll talk about tomorrow, deals with the importance of Vedic knowledge and compares Vedic knowledge to knowledge gained by sense perception. It was originally a talk that Srila Prabhupada gave that was then added as the introduction to this book. Then from Invocation of Mantra 3, what we're doing today is about the relationship between the Lord, the living entities, and the material world, which is a lot of what we've been studying in Bhagavad Gita also. And you'll notice some of the same themes that we were doing in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, come on in, please. Come in and fix things. The power goes on for 1 minute and says hi and then runs away again. It says hi, bye. And I'm not getting any power at all. Like, even when it turns on for a minute, then my light doesn't turn on. You just turn that off?
Yeah, that's just come from what
it's. Okay. I have a good battery, but it does have a limit. Okay, then in 4 through 8 is how the Mahabhagavats, how the self-realized souls, what is their vision? Now that's important to know. Pretty sure. Yes, we went over that with chapter 14. We were talking about how Arjuna asked, what are the symptoms of one who has transcended the modes of nature? And I said it's important to know what the goals are. Do you remember that slide? Important to know where you're going? You're not sure. If you have some destination, it's important to know whether or not you've achieved that destination. Pooja, are you feeling really sick? If you're feeling really sick, you should just go and rest. Because you don't look well. You look awful. You just rest as long as you need to rest. I can have someone else carry the computer back if necessary. Take care of yourself, okay? If you're back, you're back. If you know if you're not, that's okay. I'm sure I can find someone to help me. Right?
Yes.
Are you all willing to help me if she's too sick to come and help me carry my computer?
Yes.
There you go. Okay, take care of yourself. You look like you're about to fall asleep here. You look really unhappy. All right. So whenever we're going someplace, we need to know where we're going. I mean, that is, if we want to get there. And if you want to notice whether or not you are getting there. When you're getting close to someplace, you look for the landmarks. You look for the indications that I'm getting closer. So therefore, the consciousness, the behavior, we talked about thinking, feeling, and willing, right? The thoughts, the feelings, and the behavior of a spiritually perfected being are described throughout the Shastra. That way we can start to know, am I experiencing some of that? Am I getting closer? Am I getting further away? So that's in mantras 4 through 8. Then in 9 to 11, there is a comparison of knowledge and nescience. And then in 12 to 14, a comparison of relative and absolute, the material and spiritual. And then at the end, there are some very nice prayers. Very, very, so we should. And now I have a really cool graphic that if we get any power, I'll go back and show you. Well, you can sort of see it here, but you won't be able to read it. Can you all see that? We've organized this Ishopanishad as a telescope. That by studying Ishopanishad, you can see through the eyes of Shastra. And we've organized the different verses as different parts of the telescope. And whenever we get power again, I'll share this with you so that you can actually see it. Now, just looking at invocation to mantra 3. Very good. Can we get projector now?
Yeah.
Really? I feel like a kid getting a candy bar. I have power. Can we go?
Yeah.
And if we lose power, can we just push that little button and then it would work?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so exciting. Will it happen? Ha ha! Everyone give Loharam a big hand. Go back to the beginning so you can see all these slides that I worked on. Yeah, okay. It's a nice picture of Prabhupada.
Yeah.
So this is our little Shastra Chakshus logo. Benefits of studying Sri Ishopanishad. So this is what I'm hoping you'll achieve by the end of the week. You and me both. Okay, so this I already discussed all this. This is an overview of the whole Ishopanishad. And here's our cool graphic. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, Loharam! Yeah. We're cutting off the right end again. How do I get this again? I go to menu, right? And then we got to go to... Which one was it? Was it horizontal size? This one?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was another one. How do we get to that?
Can I have you?
Yeah. We got our right side cut off again. It was working great last week. It was a horizontal position? I think it was horizontal position. Yeah, oh, but that's already there, all the way at the end. Huh. No, I saw the name. Try that one, yeah. Suppose we do that. Yeah, that other horizontal position. There we go. Yeah, that's it. Just take it all the way over. Okay, that's good. Okay, good. Thank you. Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, this is what I just wrote up on the flip chart. Invocation teaches us the principle of completeness. Mantra 1, how to practice it. Mantra 2, what happens if you do practice it. Mantra 3, what happens if you don't practice it. So this is our mantra for the mantra. Of the Lord's features, there are three, but as a person, he is most complete. So we could say that this material world is basically a struggle by the living entity to become complete. Now remember this, because this is what our exercise is going to be on. Mm-hmm. So in this world, we're all trying to be complete. That's why we eat. Do you know, as a soul, we don't need to eat. The reason we eat, the reason we drink water, the reason we get clothes, a home, money. If you're falling asleep, please stand up. Because I would sing and dance to keep you awake, but I can't. I can hardly stand, what to speak of dance. Sorry. That's why people get married. That's why people have children. That's why we have friends. That's why we have a job or a hobby. We're trying to become complete. I'm doing these things, trying to meet my needs. So I have physiological needs, bodily needs, for food, shelter, water, space, health. But I also have social needs. I have psychological needs. A need means something that if you don't have it, there's some sort of pain. Like if you don't have air, there's pain. If you don't have water, there's pain. But the other things are also true. If I don't have enough time for play and recreation and fun, there's pain. There's suffering. If I don't have any connection with other living beings, there's suffering. Correct? If I don't have a life that's full of meaning, then I'm suffering. I feel incomplete. So in this world, basically what we're trying to do is feel complete again by connecting with the material energy. I'm trying to have yoga with the material energy, with myself as the Purusha, with myself as the enjoyer. And I'm thinking that if I connect with the material energy, with myself as the enjoyer, I will feel complete. If you think about marriage, one of the main reasons people want to marry is they want to feel complete. Correct? Okay. The yin and yang and
the other half of
the body. And it's really like that, because there are certain ways in which female energy is very powerful and certain ways in which female energy is very weak, and certain ways in which male energy is very powerful and certain ways in which male energy is very weak. And the combination gives you a sense of completeness. But we're trying to be complete as if we're the male and material energy is the female. And that's how we're trying to find completeness. And we're trying to get all these needs met. Are any of these needs bad? Is wanting any of these things bad? Where do these needs come from? The spiritual world. They come from the soul. However, When we try to be complete separate from Krishna, it becomes exploitive. It becomes that I'm using you, I'm using matter to try to make myself complete. My relationship with you becomes exploitive. I'm trying to use you to make me feel complete. Or I'm trying to use just matter to make me feel complete. But this feeling of incompleteness is really unlimited, because the person who's supposed to make me complete is Krishna. And he's unlimited. Thomas Merton, who wrote an appreciation for Prabhupada's Gita, who was a very famous Christian monk, he said, all of us have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. And Krishna is unlimited. When the milk is on this, when Mother Yasoda's milk is on the stove, the milk is singing. Krishna's belly is unlimited, and Mother Yasoda's breast milk is unlimited, so that he can drink forever. So Krishna is unlimited. Therefore, this hole in my heart is unlimited, and it's never filled. Prabhupada talks about this in the purport to Mantra 8. This quest to be complete materially never reaches a point where you say, "Now I'm complete." You might say that for a minute or a week. Right after the wedding, right after you get your degree, right after you get your new house, right after you get your new job, right after you get your new car, or whatever, your new sari, your baby's born. You may think, now I've got it. I've got it. Now I'm complete. But it doesn't last. Have we all experienced this? You wanted something, you thought, this thing, this situation, this person will complete me. And when you get it, maybe at first you think, yes, now I have it. I remember when I got my graduate degree, and the next day I thought, I'm not any smarter today than I was yesterday. I'm the same person. So that's exactly what it's like. You get you this, you get you that, you get you the other thing. We're thinking, if only. And as I said before, we do this in Krishna consciousness. We do the same thing, but we say it's spiritual. Right? The same fruitive mentality. If only I could live in Mayapur, then I'd be Krishna conscious. If only I did this in this service, then I'd be Krishna. We're still thinking like that. If only I did this, then I'd be complete. Then I'd be complete. Then I'd be complete. Then I'd be complete. It's never ending. Because you've got this unlimited hole and you're putting in limited stuff. So this desire to be complete materially just condemns us to suffering and rebirth. Because I keep thinking, okay, it'll be this way. No, it'll be that way. No, it'll be this way. No, it'll be that way. And I get all these different bodies to try in all these different ways. I'll be complete if I do this. Well, some of the this you can't do in this body. So you have to get a different body to do that thing or the other thing. And because it's exploitive, then I have to get a reaction for how I'm exploiting. Because I'm using others. So this is a very, very nice analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives. Haha. Now it's off the other way. Jai. Okay. See if you can press the button. Oh, Lord. We had really good luck last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we were really doing well last week. Is the light coming on when you press the buttons? Did you hold it down for 2 seconds? Okay, that should be enough. Aha! It is on. The green light, when that stops flashing, then we try. Those of you who are listening on this recording, be happy that you're in a place that electricity works, if that's where you are when you're listening. Okay, let's try again. So it takes us, 10 times as long to do this. Come on. Please. Oh, projector gods. Please make the projector work. I see a red light on. That may mean something. Can you see Florence? He probably thought everything was working. And oh, well. Okay. There's a really nice quote here. Can you see if he's there? That Prabhupada gives in the purport that really explains this whole problem. He says, the hand of a body is a complete unit only as long as it is attached to the complete body. When the hand is severed from the body, it may appear like a hand, but it actually has none of the potencies of a hand. Similarly, living beings are part and parcel of the complete whole, and if they are severed from the complete whole, the illusory representation of completeness cannot fully satisfy them. I think that's such a nice example. You can say my hand is a complete unit. It is. It's a complete unit, but only when it's attached to the whole body. So if you cut off the hand, it can't function anymore at all. And if you take this separated hand and you put things in it, you put lotion on it, you put objects in it, it can't experience any completeness. It can't experience any satisfaction. It has to be reconnected to the body. So that's our situation. We disconnect ourselves from Krishna, and then we wonder why nothing I do feels complete, why it just doesn't work. Prabhupada also gives the example of a little screw. If you have a machine that has a little screw in the machine. So you can say a screw is a complete part. But unless it's part of the machine, it can't experience its completeness. It's complete by itself. But yet, it has to work with the whole machine in order to experience completeness. By itself, it's worth nothing. And Prabhupada says, you might be willing to pay. Just like I had, I think it was with this computer. Yeah, with this computer, I had one little screw that came out. And I called the company, and they said, it will be $20 to replace the screw. I said, why so much? They said, well, for shipping. I said, just put it in an envelope. I think I paid 99 cents. But, as part of the machine, it's very valuable. One little screw can make the machine work or not work. It's very valuable. But by itself, the screw has no value. So on our own, it doesn't really work. As part of Krishna, we have some value. All right, so we're going to, why don't you open, because I can't show this to you. Why don't you open up to the invocation so you can see the Sanskrit of the invocation. Such a nice mantra.
There's a green light.
That one, yeah, we weren't able to. I tried. Plug what in? No, I have to turn this on first before I'm going to plug it. Don't worry, I know that. Oh, now we have power again? Yeah, now we have power again. Okay. It just turns that red light off and on, but doesn't turn on the bulb. Aha! Okay. We should all do some special puja. So here's the mantra. We're going to go through it piece by piece. Actually, why don't we first sing it together? I was going to sing the whole Isha Upanishad today. I forgot about it. Om Purnamada. Om means the complete. We talked about what Om meant before with Om Tat Sat, right? Mm-hmm. Purna means complete, finished, final, that complete whole. Okay, this is one of our important philosophical principles and why we can say that God must be a person. Because if he's not a person, he's not complete. Okay, next line. Purnamidam, Om Purnam Ada Purnamidam. Purnam again, complete. Idam. Prabhupada's translating Idam is this. Yes?
Why did you say if he's not a person, he cannot be complete?
Why?
I just want to understand that. That's what an important point, especially when one is preaching.
If we're going to say that God represents everything, then personality is part of everything. Isn't it? Isn't personality part of everything? If you say that here's everything, here's the complete, here's the source, but there's no personality, then something's missing. I heard a very good argument once about the concept of form from Ridhananda Maharaj. He explained it in terms of language. He said, just like a little baby just makes sounds, ga, ga, ba, ba. And it's very difficult for them to express very much. They can't communicate very much of what they want or what they need. But as soon as you take those sounds and you put them in the form of grammar, as soon as you give some grammatical... As soon as you put some form to the sounds, then you can express an unlimited number of ideas. So when sounds don't have form, it's very difficult to express anything. And as soon as you give form, as soon as you give a language to the sounds, you can express an unlimited number of things. So people will say that form restricts God. If he has a form, he must be restricted. But actually, form gives you much more ability to act. And we see that being a person gives us much more ability to act than something that's not a person. Just some blind force. Its ability to act is very limited. It may have some power, you know, a strong wind or a strong wave may have a lot of power, but it's sort of gross power. It can't build a building or write a book. That can only be done by a person. So without a person, there's so many things that can't be done, that can't be experienced, that can't be communicated. I want to just go away from the PowerPoint for a minute and just let's look at the Sanskrit. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. So that is complete. This is complete. This is a literal translation. Is that is complete. This is complete. Purnat Purnam Udachate. The complete produces a complete. So this is complete. That is complete. First line, this is complete, that is complete. Om Purnamada, Purnam Idam. This is complete, that is complete. Purnat, Purnam Udachate. The complete produces other completes. Purnasya, taking away from the complete, Purnam Adaya. So from the complete, other completes come. From the complete, other completes come. Purnam Eva Vasishyate, but the complete remains. So this is complete, that is complete. From the completes, completes are produced. From the completes, completes are taken away, yet the complete remains. Okay. This is complete, that is complete. From the complete, other completes are produced. From the completes, other completes are taken away, yet the complete remains. So that's a very simple, literal translation. Prabhupada is translating Edom as this world. So this is complete, that is complete. He's translating that as this world. Yes.
I've been trying to figure it out, but that I understand the analogy Prabhupada gives of the hand. But if we feel incomplete, like now, I don't feel complete. But so how can I be considered a complete unit?
You're designed to be a complete unit, but you're designed to be a complete unit in harmony with the whole. Another analogy that I like to give. I'm not going to do that. Here, Prabhupada's giving an example of how the world is complete. Another example I like to give is of a dance performance. Maybe because my daughter teaches dancing. Mm-hmm. So in a dance performance, each dancer is complete. Each dancer is a complete dancer, is a complete person. But they're part of a performance. Each of them has their role to play. And when they play their role, then each of them feels like they're part of a complete whole. But if each one of them is doing something independently, if each one gets up and says, well, I'm going to be the chief dancer. No, I'm going to be the chief dancer. No, I'm going to be the chief dancer. Then it becomes ugly. It becomes chaotic, and everybody will suffer. The dancers will suffer. The audience will suffer. So it's something like that. So, you know, if you get up on stage and there's a drama and you say, well, hey, I decided that I'm going to do my own dance and I'm going to be in the center, then you'll no longer feel complete. You'll feel out of sync with everybody. And this is our problem. You know, this is why we have adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic miseries. Because I'm in conflict with the material energy. The material energy belongs to Krishna. Prabhupada says in Krishna book in Rasalila that the whole world is full of Krishna singing. So, but we're not singing in harmony. So material nature is actually in harmony with Krishna. It's his energy. Vaishnavi is her name. So if we're not in harmony with Krishna, then we're going to have suffering from material nature. And then certainly suffering from other living entities, because every living entity in this world is trying to be the center. So we're all bumping into each other. If you think of material nature as the stage and the other living entities as the other dancers. So if everyone's trying to be the center, you might fall on the stage, you might fall off the stage. If every dancer's trying to be the center, you're going to bump into the other dancers. And you're also going to have difficulty with, you're not going to be able to dance properly. You won't have the proper space to dance. So therefore, we have suffering from our body and mind. We have suffering from other living entities. And we have suffering from material nature because we're putting ourselves into conflict with them. We're in a world where everybody is in conflict. So here Prabhupada is saying that the world is designed so that everything is, it's designed to be complete. It's designed to be a complete system. If we use it the way it's designed, then you don't run out of resources. I was thinking a lot, here Prabhupada was talking about water, I was thinking a lot about water. And in a simple society, whether people take baths? In a river. Do you use water when you're taking bath in a river? No. Where do you do your washing, your laundry? In the river. Are you using water? No. So you're not using water for bathing, you're not using water for laundry. And then people used to use clay pots for cooking. They wouldn't wash their pots. There were no pot washers. They would use half-baked clay. If you fully bake clay within a kiln, then it lasts for, you know, a few thousand years. But if you half-bake clay and you throw it on the ground, it very quickly turns back into earth. So you don't need to use any water for washing your cooking pots. Wouldn't that be nice? Never to wash your cooking pots?
Yeah.
Whoa. And then, you know, they were eating off leaves. So they didn't have to wash their eating utensils. So the only thing that you used water for was drinking and cooking. That means you can have a very large population without using so much water. Oh, and when they wanted to use the bathroom, when they didn't want to use the toilet, they just went outside. They didn't use water. Whereas we're using whatever, you know, like a gallon or something every time we use the toilet. So we're using so much water per person. Incredible amount of water per person. But that's not the way the world was designed, you know. So then we start running out of water. We start running out of clean water.
In Australia, it's such a big problem with the water in the ground. There's not enough water. And it's so excessive, they've calculated that per person in a household, one person uses 170 litres of water per day. And they've got so droughts.
Yeah, well, at the farm in Auckland, at New Varshana, the water system wasn't working for a bit. And so they were bringing in tanks of water. And the person bringing them in said, oh, I think you need one tank a day. And the town president said, you don't know us Hare Krishnas. We're going to need two tanks a day. He was right. You know, because we're all taking two or three baths a day. Yeah. Of course, in Auckland, it rains so much, they never have to worry about it anymore. Well, you don't really put it back in the river. You pollute it. So the way that we're using water now is we pollute the water when we use it, and it all goes into the same water treatment plant and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it goes back, but it takes a long, long time to go back, and it's polluted. Anyway, the Earth is designed to support about 10 times the current population, but it's designed to work in a different way. It's not designed to work the way that we're using it. Okay, Prabhupada talking about again how everything's complete, that Krishna's arranged that as soon as the baby's born, the mother has milk. One of my favorite quotes, it's not from Srila Prabhupada, one of my favorite quotes about the, this is just very minimally related, about the uselessness of material science is that the two hemispheres of the brain, of a man's brain, can never compete with the two breasts of a woman because nobody's come up with a substitute for milk. Yeah. For like 100, 200 years, so many scientists have tried to come up with artificial human milk. If they could produce, if anyone could produce artificial human milk, they would make billions of dollars. They'd become a very, very wealthy person. So you can just imagine how there was nothing in there. Thank you. How motivated scientists are to produce artificial human milk. And still they can't do it. I mean, they want to say they're going to produce life. They can't even produce milk. Not to speak of life. They can't produce one grain of rice, which is a seed. They can't produce one grain of rice. They can't produce one seed. Or one ant, or one mosquito. They can't even produce milk. They can't even start with one kind of milk and turn it into another kind of milk. You can't start with cow's milk and make it like human milk. And they're working really hard at it with a lot of money. It's not like it's just some weekend hobby for somebody. And still they can't do it. That's a real photograph of outer space. So Krishna's arranged everything to have be a complete arrangement for everyone's maintenance. And what's really nice about this as a meditation is if you think about the fact that we are rebellious prisoners. And generally, a government doesn't give very nice facility to rebellious prisoners. Right? Usually, prisoners get just maybe enough calories to live, but certainly not very nice food. There was one article a while ago in I think it was Alabama, some state in America, where the warden of a jail was taking the prisoner's food money and putting it in his own pocket. There was some law that if there was extra money, the warden could keep it. So he was literally starving the prisoners. The prisoners were all losing weight and starving, and he was keeping, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 a year that was meant to feed the prisoners. And what was really interesting is he was following the law, so they really had a hard time trying to figure out how to deal with him. But anyway, that's generally a government just takes minimal care of its prisoners. And think of how Krishna takes care of us. The only argument in favor of atheism is that there's suffering in the world. How can there... I don't need any water right now, if that's what you're doing.
She's drinking water.
Oh, okay. Well, then she could get me some. Sure. The only argument in favor of atheism is that there's suffering in the world. If there's an all-good, all-powerful God, why is there suffering? But one evidence we have that God is actually good is how much he provides for us that's not needed. You only give prisoners what's needed. You don't give them any extras. You never give prisoners flowers. You ever heard of any flowers in the prisons? Can you imagine prisoners getting roses? So why do we get flowers? You know, flowers are not necessary for life. There are many plants that reproduce without beautiful, fragrant flowers. Beautiful, fragrant flowers are not necessary for plant reproduction. And yet Krishna's provided flowers. Or all the different kinds of vegetables. So many different kinds of vegetables. And each kind has so many kinds. There's so many kinds of tomatoes, or tomatoes, depending on where you're from. And so many kinds of potatoes. And so many kinds of mangoes. And so many kinds of apples. And so many kinds of cucumbers. Thank you. Every kind has so many kinds. I just think in our life, we'll look at this a little later with Mantra 1. Do each of us have more than we absolutely need to live?
Yes.
Does anyone here have only what they absolutely need to live? No. I'm sure we all have a little bit more clothes than we absolutely need. In abundance. I'm sure we have more variety of food than we absolutely need to live. So that's some evidence of Krishna's kindness, because we're here as rebels, we're here as prisoners. Okay, so Prabhupada's saying that no one has to make any other effort. And Prabhupada specifically talks about that the human life, here we finally have developed consciousness. So even though complete units come from him, he remains complete.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the point about humans having consciousness. The animals are also complete?
They're conscious, but their consciousness is not completely developed. It's only partially developed.
So they're not complete?
They're complete in the sense that they have everything they need for what their desires are. In that sense. This, of course, is a very nice aspect of our philosophy, that God can expand himself. That there can be millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of expansions of Krishna. That each cowherd boy feels Krishna's only looking at me. Each cowherd girl thinks Krishna's only dancing with me. Krishna makes each of his devotees feel that they are special. Because they are. Yes?
What's this philosophy about God being zero? Who said that?
The impersonalists say that all of us put together make God. That he doesn't have any separate existence. I remember writing a poem like that when I was a teenager. Me and the tree and the bird and this and that, you put us all together and we become God. And that's their philosophy. This is a not only does Krishna give back the prasadam after eating everything, but it tastes better than it tasted before you offered it. So he gives it back better. So we're so afraid of surrendering to Krishna. We think if I surrender my free will to Krishna, then I'll become just like a robot. If you're tired, please stand up. But no, if you give your free will to Krishna, he'll give it back, but it'll be tastier than when you gave it. We'll have a break after the invocation, don't worry. I'm sorry, we're running a little late because it took us so long just to get our machines working. Mm-hmm. So this is what I was talking about in the beginning and what we're going to do our little exercise on after our break. Is we separate ourselves from Krishna and then we really struggle to try to become complete in a materialistic way. And it doesn't satisfy us. Which is why we talk about human being has complete consciousness. The animal never says, what's going on here? I got my hole in the ground, I got my mate, I got my puppies, I got my, and I'm still not complete. What's the animal never asks this question. What's the problem? But the human being does ask this question. Even very ignorant human beings ask this question. At least sometimes. What's going on here? How come I got the money and the house and the job and this and that, and it's still, there's something missing. Every human being asks this question at least once or twice in their life. What? Something funny about this place. Something's not right.
But is it true that everyone has this question? I think there are people who don't do that.
I think I'm not going to stake my life on it. But my guess is that every or almost every human being asks that question at least once in their life. Mm-hmm. Why is it that I've gotten everything I wanted, or I got what I wanted, and I'm still not satisfied?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I forget about what I asked.
They may forget about it, but what they may decide is, oh, I just didn't get the right thing.
That's right, or they numb it to alcohol.
Yes. So one of the main reasons people take intoxication, whether it's chemical intoxication or now we have electronic intoxication, is to forget that I'm incomplete. To just forget the problem. Or I think, well, I just have to get a different one. I just have the wrong wife. That's my problem. Or I have the wrong house, or I have the wrong job, or I have the wrong car. Or, if I just got a different one, then I'd be complete. Mm-hmm. So generally, they come up with some kind, they ask the question. My guess is that every human being asks the question. I'm prepared to be proved wrong. I'm prepared that there's some human beings that never ask that question. But let's just say that all or almost all human beings ask the question, I wanted this car, I saved up my money for a year, I got exactly the car I wanted, why am I still not happy? Mm-hmm. And then maybe they decide they just bought the wrong car. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they decide they should have bought a boat instead of a car. They decide, maybe I shouldn't own a house. Maybe I should just rent a house. I'm doing it with the wrong person or the wrong thing, or I'm doing it with the wrong way. I'm not doing it the right way. If I just got, somehow I don't know the trick. I didn't read the right relationship book.
Not yet.
Not yet. And once I take the right relationship course, then my marriage will make me feel complete. Then my car will make me feel complete. If I just take the right this, then, somehow if I just do this and do this and do this. And again, we can think like that in Krishna consciousness too. There must be some trick. There's got to be a trick. If I just go to this particular holy place at this particular time, and I just, say this particular prayer, if I just wear this particular thing, if I just, you may bring that mentality.
The translation to implication probably begins with the personality factor. Do they find those exact words?
No, you certainly do not. Srila mm-hmm. Prabhupada regularly brings purports into translations. He does that regularly. Srila Prabhupada's translations are often not literal.
So if somebody reads a not this one translation,
how they put it, like, in principle or something?
They just say, this is complete, that is complete. From the complete, complete comes. If you take away a complete from the complete, only a complete remains. That's a literal translation.
Is it still considered a scholarly?
Some scholars really like Prabhupada's translations, and some scholars really don't like them. So you have some scholars who criticize Prabhupada's translations and say that Prabhupada's bringing the purport into the translation. And other scholars say, this is very nice translation because Prabhupada's bringing the purport into the translation. Whenever you translate from one language to another, especially if you're translating very deep philosophical concepts, you may need to do that. But there was a really nice article written by Gopi Pranadana that appeared in our scholarly journal about Prabhupada's translations and Prabhupada's purports. And a number of devotees have written on the topic of how Srila Prabhupada did his translations, because he regularly brings the purport into the translation. You'll find it over and over and over and over again. You'll find whole sentences in a translation that aren't in the Sanskrit at all. They're just not there. They're in the purports, they're in the commentaries of the acharyas, and Prabhupada put them into the purport. To give a deeper explanation of the verse. So that just reading the verse, even if you read the verse without the purport, you'd still get much more of an idea of what it was about. I mean, he could have done it another way. He could have given a more literal translation of the verse and just put you in a position where you had to read the purport.
It's actually more accurate than his
one. I think so. I think it's giving you much more accurately what the verse is saying. It's not vague in Sanskrit if you understand it in context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It puts it into context. Okay, well, I'm going to look at three ways in which the Absolute Truth is complete. First of all, that he has at least three manifestations, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And I'm going to explain something very briefly that I can talk about for an hour or two. And that is the idea that God can be immanent or transcendent. Immanent means God is everywhere. That's the Brahman idea. And transcendent means that God is separate from everywhere, which is Bhagavan. Paramatma is also a kind of transcendence. So if you say that God is only immanent, these are not Vedic words. These are Christian words. These are Christian, Muslim, Jewish. These are European immanence and transcendence are European theological terms. So if you say that God is only immanent, if you say that he's just everywhere and he's in everything, that he has no separate existence, you can't live like that. Then just, okay, everything's spiritual, so every kalami dam Brahman. But how do you live? How do you live that everything is spiritual? So I remember when I was in college and I started taking up Krishna consciousness, and one of my friends says, yeah, you know, everything's spiritual to me. You know, when I smoke, that's spiritual. It's not a very practical way to live. How do you distinguish between how to live and how not to live? Because, as we'll see in mantras 2 and 3, there are ways to live where you become happy and ways to live where you don't become happy. You can't just say, well, everything is spiritual, and Krishna is everywhere, and Krishna is everything. But still, it's not that whatever you do, you gain the same spiritual realization. You just don't. And how do you connect with the spiritual? How do you lead a spiritual life? I mean, how do you lead even a nice material life? And how do you lead a spiritual life? What do you do? There's no clue as to what to do. If you say that God is just transcendent, then you're also really stuck. Because then you're making an absolute difference between God and the world. One is you're making an absolute identity between God and the world. Then there's no God to whom to give everything to. Everything's just God. There's no way to decide what to do, what not to do. No one to whom to give anything to. And if you decide that God is separate from the world, you can't connect the world with him then. You can't do any service for God in the world. if God is totally separate from the world, you cannot connect anything in the world with him. Therefore, you cannot serve him with the things of the world, which is why that religions that teach a transcendent philosophy end up doing humanitarian work as their spiritual service. I would say those who preach immanence tend to be the spiritual people, and those who preach transcendence tend to be the religious people. Those who preach transcendence cannot connect matter with God. They see matter as evil. They see the world as evil. They see the world as the devil. They cannot connect the world with God. And if you can't connect the world with God, how do you live? How do you brush your teeth? How do you build your house?
Well, they're thinking they're the doers.
Well, even if they're not thinking they're the doers, how do you spiritualize your life?
Make all your lives?
Mayavadis generally say that God is just immanent. Mayavadis say God is immanent and he has no transcendence. But either way, you're stuck. If there's no separate God, there's nobody to whom to offer anything. Who do I connect with? Myself? I mean... No. I don't know of any other. Everywhere, everything... it's also pantheism, perhaps. That God is everywhere. It's Maya Tatamidam Sarvam Jagadav Yaktimurti Namatsani Sarabhutani Nachaham Kesavastita. By my unmanifested form, I'm everywhere. It's Krishna as Brahman, Krishna as Brahman. He's just everywhere. You can't find him. No. Inanimate means has no life. Animus means life. These are not words that Prabhupada uses. These are European theological terms. These are not Indian theological terms. They're European theological terms. I thought it might be nice to know some European theological terms in case you ever speak to somebody who's from another part of the world besides India. Or China or Thailand. Or as far as the rest of the world, they're going to speak in terms of immanence and transcendence. Immanence means God is just everywhere. There's no separate personal God. Mm-hmm. Transcendence means there's a separate God and the world is completely separate from him. The world has nothing to do with him. The world is not spiritual. The world is just material. If the world is material, you cannot connect the world with Krishna. You can't use the world in Krishna's service. You can't use your house in Krishna's service. You can't use your body in Krishna's service. It's disconnected. Your body becomes evil. Your house becomes evil. Everything in the world becomes evil. Someone asked me the other day, said, my husband and I are very attached to each other. What do we do with it? I said, use it in Krishna's service. Connect it with Krishna. You can only do that if Krishna is also attraction between man and woman, is he?
Yes.
He says that in the Bhagavad Gita, doesn't he? He says he's Kandarpa. He says he's this attraction between man and woman. That's also Krishna. But if you think the world is separate from Krishna, then it just becomes evil. And you're stuck. And then all you can do is humanitarian service. So therefore, to be complete, there must be Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma. All of them. In order for God to be complete, he must be separate and he must be everywhere. Okay, another way that he's complete, again, that's like a one-hour topic I try to talk about in 2 minutes. So if you feel a little lost, it's because I tried to condense an hour or two into a minute. You're not stupid. It's a complex topic, and I just gave you a little bite. The second way that he's complete is that the material world is complete. There's complete facility for sense gratification here. Complete facility for being, trying to be an illusion. Everything's here. Prabhupada says something really interesting in the purport. He says we can only enjoy our senses when dovetailed with Krishna, which indicates that there's real spiritual sense enjoyment. We have actual spiritual senses, and we're meant to have spiritual sense enjoyment, but not selfish. Okay, and number three, it's also complete in that it's designed to give everybody full facility to come to Krishna.
Is the spiritual sense syndrome, is that in the material world or the spiritual world?
You can experience that also in the material world. If you're in a proper consciousness. If you're in proper consciousness. Sarvapadiva nirmuktan taparatana nirmala rishikesha rishikena sevana bhakti ruchite. If you're rid of all your upadis, all your designations. Prabhupada gives the example. He says when people have sex, they take off their clothes. Why? He says. Because we don't want any covering over our senses. If you want the most enjoyment for your senses, you have to take off the coverings. And similarly, our spiritual senses are now covered. They're covered with the subtle body and they're covered with the gross body. Therefore, we cannot get any enjoyment. Where I was born and raised, it gets very cold and you have to wear something called a mitten, which is looks something like this. It's not a glove. All these four fingers are together. Maybe some of you have never seen a mitten. But this is what a mitten looks like. And mittens can be very thick. If you're in a cold enough place, they can be even this thick. When you're wearing a thick mitten, you cannot get much pleasure for your hand. And your hand is not capable of experiencing much pleasure. I hope the bathroom is even cleaner now than it was last week. We really worked on it, trying to get up to an 8 or 9. So our senses right now are covered, just like with this mitten. And therefore, we're not able to really experience sense enjoyment. So if you are realized in this life, then in at least internally, you are engaging in your direct spiritual senses with Krishna. So in your internal meditation, in your spiritual body, you're directly relating with your spiritual senses with Krishna. So that is called Jivan Mukta. So that is possible even if you're acting and working in the material world. A little bit we experience that you're sitting in the classroom, like I said about my daughter. You know, you're sitting here, but you're thinking about somebody you love. And in your mind and in your heart, you're doing something, or you're thinking about something, you're in anxiety about it. In your mind and in your heart, you're doing something else, even though you're apparently here. Quick question, which we don't have time to get into, is if everything's completely arranged for us to go back to Godhead, why are there so many obstacles? Why are there so many difficulties? Just hold that. We won't talk about that now. We'll just put it out there. Okay. All right, take a break. All right, you can take a break until... We only have one break today instead of two. And take a break until 12:30 on that clock, which will be 12:25 on real clocks.